from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
Hey, 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 hey.
Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Part of the story today at Fisher Picks. Boy, wouldn't picks be great to do today for us? Some picks.
Sure.
Friday.
Let's pick some Olympics.
Oh, we should.
Who do you like in fencing?
My nephew.
I'll stop.
I don't think he's at the Olympics, but, right. You know, he's an up-and-comer. He's an up-and-comer.
All right.
Sal Capaccio on the Wesher Hotline. I mentioned, you know, maybe a couple times this week, like, camp starts, and you watch these clips Sal puts out, and the crowd loves a touchdown. Like, the crowd loves a bomb, right? Mm-hmm. The worthy one in Kansas City. Fans love that. Fans really don't as often root for defense in these things. Shouldn't fans want to hear from you that Kyer Elam is picking off Josh Allen for a touchdown? Like, shouldn't... I don't know if there were cheers for that. I wasn't there, but that seems like maybe something good.
Yeah, I agree. It's always the really... You know, the thing that ties you up a little bit, I think, as a fan. You're right. Fans will definitely cheer the big offensive play. And the defensive play it's more of a, oh.
Kind of groan, right? Yeah, like, oh, the offense didn't do the thing.
The cheers you hear for a pick six at camp are the defensive players.
Yelling, right. Yeah.
Yes.
Celebrating themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
But of course you want to see your defense play well. You know, I mean... it's the team, right? And they're working hard. But I think that, you know, that's just what you do. You gravitate to offense, and if you can't score, you know, it's the exciting thing. But today was a day where we had a lot of both sides, and it really kind of was divided between, I'd say, the first three quarters of practice versus the last quarter of practice for the offense and Josh Allen being hot and then the defense getting them.
Well, that seems like perfect then. Right, unless you need the offense to finish by making their last basket, so to speak, right before they go in for dinner. You know, the defense coming out at the end, like, hey, like, we're here too. So, well, lay it out for us. Like, what was going on early? Like, I know following along for the ride with your social media feed, it seemed like Allen was red hot at the start of this practice.
Yeah, and even so much of the warm-ups, like, they were on the far field, the quarterbacks were doing their own thing, and I'm telling you, Josh Reed and I were standing next to each other watching. You know, they have those little nets they throw into, and each one has a square box. Mm-hmm. So there's one up, there's one in the middle, there's one in the bottom, and they were doing a drill where they'd roll a little bit to the left or right, move, and Joe Brady or someone would yell one, and they'd have to hit the top box or two. So it's kind of have to, on a whim, you got to hit what they say. And guys, I mean, Josh Allen was just not missing, and we were counting. Oh my God, that's three in a row. That's four in a row. He wasn't. It didn't matter. He was hitting everyone. I think he hit six in a row before he finally had, you know, a miss. I think that's what it was. But it was like, wow, this is crazy. So then we go over to, and you know, Trubisky, he was probably 50-50. Shane Buechele was probably 50-50. They hit their share, but Josh was just nailing them. So we go over to the, you know, main field, and they do their one on ones, and then they go to 7-on-7, and he can't miss. he's throwing it. He made a throw to Dalton Kincaid just over the top of Cam Lewis. I have no idea how he knew just exactly the right spot to put it over the head, and Dalton catches it. Like, these are just things that were happening. We go to 11 on 11. I think he hit his first six passes, not even an incompletion. Ball never hit the ground. 11 on 11. He was just dialed in. So that happened, and then it kind of became a little more even. Well, then, towards the end of practice, about, like I said, maybe three quarters of the way through, finally, we had not seen one interception through 3 days, guys, until then. He sees Matt Collins on kind of a corner route, and he tries to fit it in the basket. He overthrows him. Just looked like a poor throw. And Taylor Rapp caught it. And then the very next play, it was like a third down and long, just I'm going to launch it up kind of deal. In fact, it was a third down drill, I guess, the whole thing. I think everything was a third down. So In that context, it also changes kind of how you view it. He just tried to launch it up to MVS. There was some hand fighting. Some media members thought it might have been interference. He kind of lost his space because he was jockeying there with a couple guys. And Christian Benford got that one. It was a little overthrow. Finally, just a pure miscommunication. I don't know if it was Keon Coleman or Khalil Shakir, but one of those guys wasn't where they're supposed to be. They're both kind of over there, and Josh threw it right in that spot, and Kyra Elam was just standing right there like he was in the Pittsburgh playoff game and took it, and then it was a pick six because of it.
Well, you know, the highs and lows of training camp. Elam, Sal, we've asked you about him a lot. I mean, I can hear your commentary about the coaching change with the assistant coach Butler leaving and just how the Bills have tried to, you know, if that's what that was, at least maybe in part, so to speak, rescue Elam's career. Your opinion, odds that it works, like what do we want from Elam? I mean, a player who's not in the press box that, you know, isn't getting you beat, of course, at minimum, or else he's not going to play if it's just too risky. How good are the chances in your mind for him, you know, again, rescuing his career here, saving himself?
I mean, I'm generally more pessimistic on those things after a couple years that could happen. I think you settle into who you are. But I think in this case, he has a little bit more of a chance because he has different eyes on him. You know, they're going to the new position coach is going to, you know, be, I think, a benefactor for him. I just think that the way that him and John Butler obviously, you know, clashed in whatever way, whether it's technique or personality, it just didn't fit, and it probably weighs on you. And, you know, both guys, you know, it wasn't the right fit. So, you know, that's probably going to help him, but he's still got to do it. And I like what he did in the spring. I like what I saw from him in OTAs and minicamp. I'm liking what I'm seeing right now out of him. But it doesn't mean he's going to ever live up to the first-round status where he was drafted. I think if Kyra Elam just becomes what Dane Jackson was, that's a win at this point for the Bills, and they'll take that. Dane Jackson's a good player. Dane Jackson got paid in free agency a little bit, right? I mean, you know, he's a starter in the league now. He's going to be starting for the Carolina Panthers. I think that's what you're after if you're the Bills with Kyra Elam. It'd be great if he could become, you know, that first-round pick. But, you know, we're to a point now where I think you're kind of resigned to the fact that he won't, and if he did, oh, my God, that'd be amazing. But can he be a Dane Jackson? Can he be a late-round pick, you know, like worthy type player, a Levi Wallace, undrafted free agent, who you go, you know what, we're getting really solid play out of him when we need him. That would be what they'd want, I think.
Yeah, we talked about this already earlier in the week, right? We like Benford and we like Douglas with good reason, but there's not a lot behind them that's really proven at all. Like Elam is maybe the most proven guy, and he's really not proven at all.
Agreed. I think Jamarcus Ingram is probably making the team. At this point, I think he's your fourth boundary corner, but he's really played very little in the NFL. Behind him, what do you have? Kyren Brown, I think he's been in the league a little bit, hasn't really played. Daquan Hardy, a draft pick, and then a couple undrafted free agents to Corey Couch and Kenny H. Lovely. That's it. Like, they don't have anything there. And you're going to have to get something from Kyra Elam to really elevate the depth of that position. Because if, you know, Christian Benford or Russell Douglas turn an ankle, I mean, you know, the guy, that you're one play away from that guy playing a lot.
Well, maybe that
matters.
Yeah, there's a sign maybe of the Bills' faith in Elam just in what they haven't done at the position, right? I mean, if they were as worried about him as some of us have been all along, don't you think they would have added to the room in some way with more of another journeyman veteran or someone that could just supplement what they've got?
I do. I think they have they have faith in their coaching and development and Kyrie Elam's work ethic that it'll eventually work this year. But I also wouldn't discount that they have some free agents on speed dial ready to go if it just doesn't, right? Like, hey, I mean, we're gonna try and let this work. And if we get 2 weeks into camp and it just doesn't seem like it's getting any better, we're going to have to make a call here to bring someone in to strengthen that position, because it's not just Elam, like I said. It's not like the last few years, guys, where if Elam isn't there and doesn't do it, you can turn to a guy like Dane Jackson. You can turn to a guy like Levi Wallace in years past. Like, they don't have that. The next guy, like I said, up is Jamarcus Ingram. Or is it Cam Lewis? Cam Lewis is a nickel corner. He's a safety. He played boundary, I think, a little bit early in his career. It's Daquan Hardy, who he's 5'9". He's really not suited to play that spot. He's never played an NFL game. He's a rookie, late-round pick. Like, that's what you're looking at behind it.
Yeah. Well, depth is really becoming sort of a regular topic here. Not that it ever can't be, but their depth in the secondary. Bulldog is talking about depth at edge rusher, just how few names we know there. I wondered about offensive line. Sal, I really don't know if you would consider that sort of a worrisome thing, depth up front. I was listening to a podcast today about different lines from Establish the Run. I sent you a stat I thought was interesting, by the way, on Baltimore, how last year, going into the season, they had the second most experienced starting five offensive line based on number of career starts. And this year they are 32nd. They've lost so many games, years, you know, veterans off the starting line. And that includes Ronnie Stanley, who's hurt all the time. What is your thought on the Bills' depth at that position?
Did they give an opinion on the Bills?
I haven't finished it, but not yet.
Okay, because I didn't know if I would agree or disagree. I think it's one of the stronger units as far as depth on the entire team. I am not worried whatsoever. I don't think many teams can go as deep as the Bills do on offensive line. I think the Bills have a good starting five. It's not necessarily one of the best in the league, but it's good. It's solid. And I think they have five backups that can come in and play at any point and still be good. I think they built a really good unit. I thought it was a good unit last year, and I think it could be better this year, even without Mitch Morse. Unfortunately, obviously, he's a nice player for them. Mm-hmm. But Connor McGovern, he loves playing center. He wants to play center. Connor McGovern was the most highly recruited center, I believe, or rated center in the country coming out of high school. But then he fell into playing guard at Penn State, and then he played guard in the NFL. So I think he's fine there. Maybe David Edwards at left guard could worry a little bit, but he started at left guard and won a Super Bowl for the LA Rams a few years ago. I mean, you think about the depth. Lael Collins, the depth piece on this team.
Yep.
Cedric Van Pran Granger played in the SEC. Now, that's an unknown. We get it. But I think a lot of people have faith that, like, here's a rookie that probably can develop into something nice. And you guys know, and this will come down to what everything I'm saying will really come down more to the faith that they have in Ryan Vandermark and Alec Anderson. Like, they really like Ryan Vandermark and Alec Anderson. They've been with this team for a couple of years now, and through the development of Aaron Cromer, I think they are very, very comfortable with those guys having to play at tackle and guard if they had to.
How much do you think the shift here, Morse out, McGovern moving over, Edwards sliding in there to McGovern's left guard spot, will change? This is a tough question maybe to answer because it's a new coordinator, you know, with his first time really having a full off season to do what he wants to do. But from an athletic standpoint, this came up yesterday at some point. I've got visions of Morse getting out of there and pulling and just being really an athlete. And I'm not sure McGovern is up to that. My guess is he's not. He's a little heavier and bigger than Morse was. Not that Morse was small, but maybe 20 pounds or so difference. So I wonder about, you know, what they'll be doing and what kind of changes that will cause into, you know, how they block their, how they scheme up their run game.
I think Connor McGovern is a tremendous athlete. He actually has played all over the place. He played a little like tight end and fullback for the Cowboys. That's how good of an athlete he is. So I think if the Bills want him to do that, he'll be absolutely up to the task.
Okay.
To me, it's really more of the stuff that, you know, the continuity, the consistency with your quarterback, with your right guard and left guard, right? I mean, like, here we go again. Deion Dawkins has another left guard next to him. You know, mm-hmm. he's kind of had that throughout his career. Now he's got another center. There's less consistency there. Less consistency with Josh Allen than what he's had for the last several years. But like I said, you know, McGovern is very comfortable playing there. He wants a player. I don't think they're going to take anything out of the playbook. Okay. I think they're going to be very comfortable with Connor McGovern doing all that kind of stuff, going back back to his days in Dallas, like I said, like he basically, you know, played a little bit of everything. And, you know, when he was signed, I remember talking with Mike McCarthy that year at the combine and him saying, or the owners meetings, and him kind of talking about how like he could play in a pinch kind of anywhere you need him, to be quite honest with you. The Bills line is athletic up front. Spencer Brown, they love to pull Spencer Brown. That's something that a lot of teams don't do. They'll pull their right tackle across the left side. So one of their best plays last year was Spencer Brown, you know, pulling and trapping. And Deion Dawkins, we know, can do that. So I think they built a line here that they believe is very athletic, able to move, and it very much suits what they want to do with James Cook running the ball. And I think that's when you saw what they were at their best last year.
Sal Capaccio with us. Bills are off tomorrow, then back on the practice field Sunday morning. Keon Coleman, you know, you were not sure what went wrong on that one play today, the Elam play. There was also a play yesterday, drop or incomplete, fumble, something. People are very, of course, naturally interested in Coleman, maybe the number one guy people driving out to Fisher are looking forward to watching. How would you describe his first week?
He has fit right in. You know, to me, it's been more positive than negative. I would give him more on the plus side. Really, honestly, Mike, the only real negative to me was the drop that he had and or fumble, whatever you want to call it. He either had a drop or a fumble that we debated, but either way, it's one or the other. Yesterday, we talked about it. Those things happen. You don't want them to happen. I think he had today, like the very first play, basically a 7-on-7, he cleanly beat Rasul Douglas down the field for a touchdown. And that's the crowd cheered because the Bills scored a touchdown over their own player, right? And he cleanly beat him. I asked him after practice to describe the route, and he was talking about where he needed to be on his depth at the numbers. Like, he was very intricate about it. It was really good. That's what I was looking for. Like, is it just like, hey, I'm running straight past him? And he said, hey, my job was to get to this spot and then, you know, run a fade and kind of, you know, have that look. That's my landmark right there, what I'm looking at. And, you know, he talked about Rasul and him helping each other and, you know, when it's a good rep or a bad rep, all those guys, but especially Rasul, he was asked about. And, you know, and I think that's a good sign. Like, when he said, yeah, we'll talk about, like, what I did, what he did, what helped me, what didn't help me. And I think those are really good signs of maturity for a young guy. I think it's been a very nice first week, a very good first week with really one blemish, to be quite honest with you. And then, look, we talked about catch radius with him, and then it got to, you know, because of the speed and the gauntlet and all that stuff. I'm back to catch radius. I mean, he catches everything that's kind of in his circumference, you know? It's really wild.
Right.
And these guys have a lot of guys like that. Mac Hollins does that. Chase Claypool can do that to a lesser degree, but he's just kind of like that. But Keon Coleman, just if it's around where his hands can reach, he catches it.
I'm not sure how specific you can get here, so I don't want to ask you about Coleman specifically or Samuel specifically, but so far, three practices in, from what you can discern when they are in 11 on 11, are we seeing receivers in all kinds of different spots?
Yes. I mean, they're moving around a lot. They're learning the spots. They have to know the spots. And this goes back to yesterday, and there's another thing I asked Keon about, which is yesterday Joe Brady said, we don't have a true X or a true Z, you know, that'd be on the outside or in the slot. We have two-man and three-man concepts. Like, if you're on the field with two receivers, one of you is doing, the guy on the outside is doing this, the guy's on the inside doing that. I don't care. You may line up one way or the other. Now, granted, they're going to have specific spots. Each guy's, you can't just say, hey, where do you want to be, right? I mean, you can't do that. But the whole point is, like, I can put, if you're on the field, like, you can line up in either spot. Maybe we're going to move you because of a matchup, because maybe a team stays in a certain spot, the defense. So we're going to do it that way.
Yep.
And then Curtis Samuel, too. Like, Curtis Samuel has been a running back. He's lined up in the backfield. When I asked him today about that, like you're talking about, and, like, you know, running the ball, how much you like running the ball, what you see, envision yourself, he said, I don't want to, like, give away strategy in what we're doing. He said, but I've worked with Joe Brady before, and you've seen a lot of the things I've done, so you could imagine the things that we're thinking about.
Yeah, that's enough of a clue right there.
Right, that's exactly right, yes.
Couple more, Sal, quickly. Bobby Babich today, defensive coordinator. Yeah. What was interesting?
He's just interesting. He's just really, really good. He's a departure from a lot of coaches. He really is. He's now, maybe someday he gets a head coach and he'll be a little different. I love listening to him. He's very honest. He's super energetic. You know, talking a lot about, you know, something was really interesting to me was him talking about, and this is process over results, right? I get it. People don't like to hear that. But he said, you know, if he's watching a guy and the guy does all the right technique, but the result is at the end not as good, he's okay with that. Because eventually, if you're doing everything the right way, mm-hmm. it's going to work out. Like, we're going to go to a game. And if you do something wrong, but it does work out, like, you can't fool yourself to thinking that you were doing it the right way. And that was interesting. And, you know, him talking about how he has to navigate where he should be watching the team. He loves, as he said, being in the mud with the guys. Like, he is a position coach. He loves being there. He can't do that as a coordinator, really. He's got to bounce around. He's got to be the CEO. And it's a bit of adjustment for him, to be quite honest, right? And I think that's something he's kind of, like, working through right now.
Okay. And Tua gets paid, Sal. He'll come in $53.1 million per for 4 years. I'm seeing it pointed out that that's more in 1 year than Dan Marino ever made playing for the Dolphins total. Mm. But, you know, that's not shocking, right? That's how it goes. How did the Dolphins do here? 4 years. I know the conversation, it's been interesting. It's gone back and forth from, oh, my God, you really want to pay him the new market, you know, the new benchmark for this position? Is he worth it? But then there's always, well, what are your options?
You know, I thought it might get to 50-something because it's just how these things work out, and he was waiting and waiting, and he was eventually going to probably get paid. I mean, even north of that now, 53. I'm a little surprised how high the number is. Also a little surprised the 4-year deal, not a traditional 5-year deal. I read that generally these extensions go to 5 years, not 4 years. So I wonder what that looks like as far as the money and they're protecting themselves. Like, it's only four, so like you're getting a lot of money up front, maybe after two if it doesn't go right. So let's wait on the details of all of that. But like you guys said, and I agree, I mean, it's, if you're a Buffalo Bills fan, a rival fan, I think you're okay with, you know, you're not necessarily frightened of playing Tua Tagovailoa twice a year. You know that he's a good quarterback. You know they have a great system. You know he's got a lot of weapons around him. But he's really largely, in a lot of ways, been so successful because of that system and weapons. For me, I look at the cap number and say, they already have challenges keeping that team together for some of the things going on and some of the players they have. This is going to make it even a lot more challenging over the next couple of years.
1-6 in 7 regular season appearances against the Bills. I've got him at 12-6 against the division. So, yep.
Because he beats the Dolphins all the time. I mean, he beats the Patriots others. All the time.
6-0 against New England, 5-0 against the Jets, 1-6 against
the
Bills.
There you go, both. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
How far away are we, Sal? Has it come up at all when Bean was speaking earlier this week to an adjustment on Allen's contract?
Nothing recently, Bulldog. The last time he talked about that, I believe, was the combine or the owners' meetings. One of those two times. And he said, I'd like to get to a point where I don't have to restructure him. And he kind of alluded to, like, down the road, he might just have to make, like, a new deal, basically, right? Like, that could happen. It wasn't those words, but I kind of got the sense of that. We were talking about that today, a couple media people, and I said that. Like, because of all these quarterbacks, someone asked me, you know, what do you think they're going to do with Josh and adjusting him next year? And I said, we might be to a point where they just give him a new deal. Like, maybe you just say, all right, let's just rip up this one, give him a new one. We'll lower the first couple years of the cap, you know, and then we'll put him in line. And that might be what we're looking at maybe, you know, sometime between now and next offseason.
You going to hang in Rochester tomorrow?
No, I got to come back tonight. My wife and son have been on a cruise without me here this week.
I love a cruise.
They get in tonight. I'm leaving here after I talk with you guys. I'm going to get them tonight. We still have some house playoff baseball going on, action tomorrow, so I got to be back there for that.
Right.
We got a little team party get together tomorrow night, so I'm pretty busy. And then back up here Sunday. And we'll have a 9:45 a.m. practice Sunday. We'll hear from Matthew Smiley at 9:15. Super excited to talk about the kickoff rules with Matthew Smiley at 9:15 a.m. on Sunday. And everybody, Monday night, we'll remind you again, we talk, but we're going to be out at Bar Bill East, me and Matt Bove doing Always Game Day in Buffalo. It's going to be a fun time. That'll be Monday night at 7.
And I heard Brownie and Tasker on One Bills Live mention that Monday is expected to be the first padded practice.
There you go. Thank you. I didn't know if it had been mentioned. I know there's a 5-day acclimation period. They've practiced 3, so this would be day 4 would be tomorrow, day 5 would be Sunday, and that would make sense.
Thank you, Sal. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk on Monday.
You got it, guys.
That's our man, Sal Capaccio from Rochester. Bills training camp coverage. Sal's appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
This opening ceremony is just insanely cool. The boats. I love that it's raining. I don't know if you'd love that it's raining if you're an athlete, but just like the pictures Team USA mm-hmm. on this huge boat, almost 600 athletes. France right behind it, almost the same number.
Yep.
The boats are incredible.
It looks much better since it got dark out. I would say. Like, I think with the river lit, like the bridges are all lit up and all the lights on the shore and the Eiffel Tower, it just looks spectacular. Like boats on the water at night look great.
That's so true.
Yeah. Real quick, I'll just squeeze this in. Sal mentioned a lot of great plays that happened at camp. The Best of Training Camp is back, and it's brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown.
Give it to Kyer Elam today, perhaps. Pick six.
Sure.
If we're passing out flowers, keeping score.
I'm fine with it.
Elam on the board.
Even though fans groaned and didn't cheer.
Right. The defense loved it, though. Theo Greminger next. We'll talk some fantasy football. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.